please. I know you've just been served your dessert. Please continue, but because of time constraints, and some announcements that need to be made, I think we will start to the program. The principal constraint under which we're operating is that the bar upstairs closes at 10:30. So we need to kind of speed it up, you know. First of all, welcome to this meeting of the Philadelphia Society. I'm Stan Evans, the president of the society. Thank you. Thank you very much. Just some housekeeping matters. On your program, it says that the reception tomorrow evening will be at the Folk Art Center. That has been changed, and it will now be at the Williamsburg Lodge, which is the same place where the dinner will be held tomorrow, so that does simplify matters a bit. The bus, which will take us to the Williamsburg Lodge, will load up and leave at 5:50. Is that right, Julie? Am I getting that right? And it will be right outside the entrance to this restaurant. So please keep that in mind. If you are not, let me continue that. If I guess you need to sign up for that, right? You should sign up with Julie Flick or someone else at the table so we will know the numbers that we'll have to transport to that event and also to the brunch at the Kingsmill Sunday morning. Also, if some of you have arrived late just in time for dinner and did not have time to register, please do so after this meeting is over, and there will be people again outside to register you. And also, Forrest McDonald made a very good suggestion. If after this meeting is over, the various speakers for tomorrow's program would come forward and meet with Forrest and Jim McClellan and George Carey and Bert Folsom, just to make sure we're all on the same sheet of music for tomorrow's activities. I would like also to thank certain folks who have been instrumental in bringing this meeting about. As noted on your program, we want to acknowledge the assistance of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute and Young America's Foundation for their help. And also, yeah, very good idea. And also to Louise Oliver and Jim Heinisch, who are hosting the reception and brunch tomorrow evening and Sunday morning. Now, I think, is that all the announcements I was supposed to make? Have I made them all? Okay, good. I do need to forge ahead. However, let me say that, by way of preface, that I come from Washington, D.C., as many of you here do, and that's the political realm. This is an academic meeting. And yet I found that there are ways in which academic discussion lends new perspective to events in our nation's capital. And I think in particular of the phenomenon of multiculturalism and looking at different cultures and subcultures around the world and in our own society. And that's a very useful way to look at things in Washington. We have discovered, for example, in the last couple of years that there is in America a little-known subculture based primarily in Arkansas, which has an unusual custom for grieving. As you know, this is a distinctive thing in many different cultures. And then when a loved one dies, or someone close to you dies, that his friends and those who cherished him most come together as a group and ransack his office. Uh, it helps them get through a very difficult time. Now, now in the interest, unfortunately, I have to say this because we are an academic group. However, the very fact that I told that joke and the fact that this, and more even more so, the fact that this meeting is devoted to consideration of the American Constitution is construed as being hostile to the Clinton administration. And I'm required to tell one anti-Republican joke. And this is a Bush-Quayle joke. I have a Kemp joke and a Bush-Quayle joke. I'll tell the Bush-Quayle joke. This occurred in 1989, supposedly, in that George Bush went to a summit conference with Gorbachev, and in the course of that was quite impressed with Shevardnadze, who was then the foreign minister of the then Soviet Union. And he asked Gorbachev, he said, this guy Shevardnadze is really sharp. How did you come up with him? And Gorbachev says, well, here in Russia, Mr. President, we like riddles. When I met him, I said, Edvard, I have a riddle for you. Who is the son of your father but not your brother? And Shevardnadze says, well, that's simple, it's me. And I was impressed by his quickness, so I hired him, and he's done a very good job. So Bush comes back to Washington, goes into the Oval Office, calls in Quayle, and says, Danny, I have a riddle for you. And Quayle says, yes. He said, who's the son of your father but not your brother? And Quayle has no idea, and says, well, I don't know. Could I think about it? And yes. So Quayle goes out in the hall. He's standing in the hall thinking about it, and Cheney comes down the hall. And Quayle says, Dick, I have a riddle for you. Yeah. He says, who's the son of your father but not your brother? Cheney says, it's easy. It's me. And Quayle, okay. Well, Quayle goes back. Back into the Oval Office and said, Mr. President, I have the answer to your riddle. And Bush says, well, who is it? He says, it's Cheney. And Bush says, no, stupid, it's Shevardnadze. We have fulfilled our equal time requirements. Okay. Now, to the substance of this meeting. The theme is recovering our past, new perspectives on the founding. I've long thought that the motto of history writing in the United States, and I guess most of the Western world, was written by Rousseau in the opening part of his Discourse on Inequality, in which he, and I copied this down so to get it just exactly right, he said this, let us begin by setting aside all the facts because they do not affect the question. This would be the animating spirit of historiography for much of this century. The mission of the Philadelphia Society, in large measure, has been to combat and to correct that by looking at the facts, by not setting them aside, but by bringing them forward and talking about them and writing them up and analyzing them. And that is really what this meeting is about. The need to recover our past, in my view, and I will try to be reasonably brief about this, is really at least a twofold task. The first aspect is to rediscover a lot of older scholarship that has been either buried or forgotten. And this has come up in previous meetings, I think, very much about the common law and the background of the people that came to this country. It's very hard to find some of that history. I'm talking about Maitland, Pollock, Stubbs, Hallam, very hard to find that. That all needs to be brought back. And the biographies and writings of many of our founders, Sam Adams, Roger Sherman, John Witherspoon, John Dickinson, many others, that all needs to be recovered and reclaimed. But beyond that, the second aspect is the development of a newer scholarship that builds on and amplifies the old, and in some cases, indeed, corrects the old. And we were talking at the table, and I've talked with some other folks about it here. I believe that in this regard, in the academy today, or in a very small part of the academy, our part of it, that seminal work is being done. And Forrest MacDonald and I were just discussing this outside while we were deploring the evils of cigarette smoking. That is... And I might say about that, Forrest, and smoking in general, I do smoke, and so does Forrest, that if there's something wrong with smoking, why doesn't somebody say something about it? But I'm sorry, that was a digression. That seminal work is being done that will topple, I believe, and replace the long-reigning historiography that I've referred to. And not only the historiography, but to bring down, I think, the entire clanking, soul-dead, leftward orthodoxy of which that historiography is a product. And our speaker this evening is someone who has done yeoman work in this endeavor of writing this history, recovering our past, well known to all of you as a member of our society and has appeared on programs previously. I've known him, we were talking about this earlier, since 1968. And he probably doesn't want me to bring this up, but at that time, John Wilson was very active on the nuclear disarmament issue. And he was the head of a group that used all the buzzwords. It was called the Committee for the Prevention of Nuclear Peace. And the motto was, and I remember that it made a great impression, the motto of it was, since we already have enough bombs and missiles to blow up the world 10 times over, a few more couldn't hurt anything. It's perfectly logical, right? I mean, what? So I like the cut of his jib. And we have been good friends ever since. He was teaching then at St. Louis University, and for many years now has been at Hillsdale, where he is doing precisely what we're talking about doing at this meeting, that is attempting to recover build upon the lost scholarship of the past and to encourage new scholarship for the future. In his own writings, in the curriculum that he has fashioned Hillsdale, this is exactly the task upon which he has embarked. I have to tell one other thing about John, and I asked him once, I said, what do you think was the difference, the most characteristic, defining difference between the American Revolution and the French Revolution? He said, well, the American Revolution, if you look back and read the documents, which is very relevant today, was that most of our American revolutionists were interested in term limits, an issue that is very prominent now, and the French Revolution was more interested in height restrictions. And that really does kind of sum it up. And so without further ado, would you please welcome John Wilson.